Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Professional Awesome's Hypercritical Radio. I am Hayden Lowe, and I am one of the hosts for today. I am joined by...
Mike Lowen.
Tyrone.
Tyrone. Dan O'Donnell.
For another one of these chats. Oh, yeah, and we don't have a guest, so it's just us. You get to listen to us.
Take that.
Yeah, get that in your ear holes. So, y'all were in the desert and got really dusty.
It's honestly the perfect way to explain this. We went to a desert and brought way too much of it back with us, because that's how this works. And we are going to spend the next 5 years finding that desert in the car in weird places where it never comes out of.
Are you still picking...
That sounds like Button.
Button will? Yeah. Are you still picking out desert boogers, Mike?
Mm-hmm. All that whatever color, like the... Half the people think it's radiation. Other people think it's like explosives. Other people think it's cocaine. Who knows what it is, but it's... My teeth are still... Yeah, you can still taste it.
I had a very similar experience when I went to SEMA in Las Vegas. Like, the air is so dry. It just sucked all the life out of my sinuses. So, like, the first, like, two nights there, I would just blow my nose and it'd be like, oh, cool, this is a nosebleed, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So that sucked all the air out of your sinuses and replaced it with COVID?
No, cocaine. Correct.
Yeah, I got that one real good, too. Unfortunately, what happened in Vegas did not stay in Vegas.
That's a good point as well. That's terrible. That's terrible. But you made a good point that I just realized. Dan got a nosebleed in the desert, and that was the first one in a while. So you were right.
I don't even remember getting that, but...
Are you kidding me? Driving in the car, going to get fuel, and your nose started bleeding. I'm like, what the fuck?
I mean, it makes perfect sense. I don't even remember that.
You don't remember? How do you not remember? What is wrong with your memories? This happened like 2 weeks ago. And I was like, that's weird. You're like, yeah, I haven't had one in like a long time. Because for those who don't know and don't live with Dan... or haven't lived with Dan used to get a lot of nosebleeds, but then they just like stopped. Why did they stop?
I honestly have no clue at all.
He evolved and it's, as a human being.
Well, no, not really. I've regressed. Like, it's funny because I'll get hit in the face playing basketball and I never ever get a nosebleed that way. It'll be just like I'm walking along and I'm like, oh, that's a cute squirrel nosebleed.
And in this case, he wasn't even walking along. He was sitting in the passenger seat of a rental car, and his nose started to bleed. It's like, what?
Apparently. I can't cooperate.
Because Dean can't remember shit. I'm starting to worry. It totally makes sense. Is this early onset Alzheimer's or something like that? Like, do we need to go get those markers checked? Like,
probably true.
This is important. I mean, geez. It's like 2 weeks ago.
This man is so concerned about your nose bleeding.
I'm not concerned about the nosebleed. It's not like his brain was coming out. I'm worried that he can't remember it. Like, it's like maybe the nosebleeds are a lack of, or like diminish the blood flow to the brain, which is causing temporary forgetfulness.
Lapse of memory.
No, Dan's an athlete. He's got CTC to CTV.
He's got no problem. I probably do, actually, from a car accident.
Oh, God, that's terrible. I was going to say, out of all the people who've gotten hit in the head, I don't know if Dan's the most hit in the head, but the accident could have contributed.
One exceptionally hard one.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That is what she said.
So, yeah, this is...
This went sideways.
Yeah. This is going to be our big recap episode about Global Time Attack Finals, and it's just nosebleeds and...
For the first 5 minutes.
Desert boogers and...
Anyway, yeah, I mean, it still counts. And anybody who's been to Button Willow, all of these things correlate, so it's okay. And if you haven't been to Button Willow, now you're initiated that this is the general feeling. Like that conversation we just had for 4.5 minutes, that's how Button Willow feels. Welcome.
To the desert.
So yeah, so we went to Super Lap Finals. It's now called Super Lap Finals because SLB...
Global Time Attack.
Yeah, Global Time Attack. Finals, because SLB is now, you know, Superlap is now at Coda in February. This used to be the Superlap battle, at least back in the day, and so now, yeah, they've renamed. So yeah, this year was Actually, quite a few people came out. There was a kind of a full house, more so than normal, I think. I mean, GTA normally has a pretty good grouping, but I think that quite a few of the fast guys came out, which hasn't been as common in the last couple of years, right? So that was cool. Obviously, some of the tip of the spear were, in Unlimited at least, were us, Professional Awesome, if you don't know. Then Life Motorsports with their GTR, Cole Paulson driving that. And Cable with the Viper, 9-liter Viper. I think he had a lifter problem. I don't actually remember. Tony was talking to him about it while I was standing around there. So he didn't actually get to run, unfortunately.
That's really sad.
Yeah. And then why am I blanking? Corvette.
Corvette?
There's the Corvette.
Coker? Or what? Cagle? Sean?
Cagle. Yeah, Sean Cagle.
Yes, Sean.
Big Sean. And so he was there as well. So decent showing there.
Dayoshi Hara
with that,
evasive S2000.
Yeah, evasive Voltex kit S2000 blue, really clean, nice car. So yeah, a decent amount there. I mean, the list goes on. There's a couple more after that, but that was the kind of the tip of the spear there. So decent amount of people all running between the 37s and the 41s ish. So that was good in that regard. But yeah, how did it go for us? Right? That's what we're talking about. So what? We did a test day, which was Thursday? Holy shit. What day was that?
Friday.
Okay. So yeah, Friday, we did a test day. Dan gets in the car, drives it around the track. How did that go, Dan? Tell us about it.
Everything seemed peachy keen. The problem with me driving is a lack of experience over the last few years was as good as I could remember, but it didn't seem to create much power difference in between the different boost level settings. I mean, it made more power on higher boost, but it wasn't like at Gingerman. I felt like I was going to die on high boost, and at Buttonwillow, it didn't feel the same way. But we thought, well, maybe I'm just getting used to it. So the one other that didn't jump out as a major issue, and nothing on data suggested there was any problems. Coolant temps look good, oil temps good. Everything looked pretty good. And because I never pushed for a full fast representative lap, we didn't really have top speeds to validate from the last time we were at Buttonwillow. So we ended testing really early on Friday with the only concern that we were using more fuel than we anticipated. So we would need to get some fuel. But other than that, we were in pretty high spirits, I'd say.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, it was weird, but yeah.
Yeah, there was nothing to work on that we knew of. So didn't really have to do much overnight other than just get fuel. And Tom would be flying in the following morning. The one other thing that was funky was on a cooldown lap. The throttle blipped, and I thought it was maybe me.
Oh, right. Yeah. And you thought your big ass foot hit the accelerator pedal.
Yeah. But it was still awkward as shit. So those were the only concerns. Was like, oh, we're using too much fuel. I did mention that the car didn't seem as insanely fast, but it still seemed pretty freaking fast. Yeah. Clodhoppers touching throttle pedals.
Yeah, so we had to go get some fuel, so we went to find some fuel in L.A. We found some from a guy, I can't remember what that place was, but he did side-by-sides. It was pretty sweet. You know, anywhere you have the joys of Southern California, we drive like, I don't know, 50 miles or 100 miles, and it ends up being 5 hours, which was fun. That's always fun. So we did that, got our fuel, went to sleep, got up early, go to get Tom, drive back. So we get to the track at like what? 11?
Yeah, between 11 and noon, something like that. And the next session was at 1 or 2?
Yeah, 1 or something like that after lunch. So we get all ready. We get Tom in the car. Like I said, we were feeling pretty okay. Yeah, we didn't really know if it didn't have power. So we didn't put the new tires on. He ran on the old tires first, and then we put the new ones.
Correct. Yeah.
And so then he drove it. Then I did some announcing in the booth while he drove it, which is the worst thing in the world for my anxiety.
It was not that bad.
No, I mean, I'm fine with it talking. I'm obviously fine with like having that conversation. I like talking to Cuban and all that stuff was good. I got to talk about, you know, some of the technicalities and tell people to shut up about electric cars a little bit. And yeah, all that's good. But you know, the car's out there and Tom's running laps and
yeah, what you're not down there.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, the car comes back in and he runs like a 48 and then he runs a pretty hard one and he runs a 46, something like that.
Yeah, and I think it was a 46.
And I'm like, yeah. I mean, basically you're like, I mean, even if that's low boost, you know, like, that's not, I don't know. And so I'm freaking out. Like, I'm like getting antsy and Cuban's like, you need to go. And I'm like, do I look like I need to go? Freaking out up here.
And are you okay, bud?
Yeah, I'm just, you know.
Okay, bud?
I'm like a goddamn squirrel. Yeah, I just wanted to get out of there just to see what's going on.
Remind me, Mike, was he on the lowest boost setting or maybe was
he was supposed to.
Yeah.
But then he was supposed to go up to, he went from 0 to 2. And for everybody's sake that to understand, we have 5 boost settings at 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. So we told him to go out on 1, run a lap. We told him to go out on 2, run a lap and see how it felt because Tom hasn't driven the car in quite some time. We just want him to feel it out and see what it looked like. So we gave him 2 to see what that looked like, right? And if he ran that 48 on 0, then ran that 46 on 2, that was still concerning because the car should be substantially faster than that, even on 2. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I think at that time, I mean, the tires that were on it were 4 or 5 years old or whatever.
5 years old.
I didn't have that big of concern. I was like, well, maybe those tires are just that crusty.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I wasn't worried about that. Out.
It just looks slow down the street.
Sure, but I couldn't see it from your perspective.
Yeah, I saw him coming because I was in the booth. So, like, looking in the booth, you know, you're 3.5 stories, 4 stories up almost at that point. And so I could see a lot more that you could see a lot more of the track from that position and especially start finish coming around. I'm just like, go. You can hear noises. It just didn't seem like it was moving. So that was, that's why I was like, is that 0? Is that -1? Did we put him on -1? Yeah. It was just confusing in that regard.
Yeah.
I mean, it was weird. It was just weird. Anyway, so it wasn't moving.
Well, I forgot. We need to throw out that we must have found this on Friday, and this should have been our cause for concern more than we thought, that the wastegate duty cycle settings had to be lowered significantly.
Sure. Oh, yeah, yeah.
To get to the boost settings, like it was over boosting initially. So we had to turn the wastegate duty cycles way down to get the boost in the right area. And yeah, I think we figured that out on Friday. Did we not?
That was, and I don't remember what it was, but I kept on saying like, it seems really suspicious to me because I was like,
sure.
I was like, it's cold here. Like I'll give it that. Like we woke up and it was 33 degrees at the track. For anybody who's obsessed with Southern California, says it never gets cold. Welcome to that. 33 degrees at the track. So everything was pretty cold. The garage was all right. It was like 40 in the garage, 45 in the garage. But it was cold. It was a cold morning.
Yeah.
And then we did that. And then it's also Buttonwillow's 200 feet off the ground. Last time we ran at Gingerman, I think we looked it up. It was 660 feet. So we're like, altitude, temperature, maybe. I didn't actually PVMRT it, but I was like, okay.
We should have.
Yeah, I should have fucking.
We really should have.
Calculated it.
Because that would have been a big.
Yeah, red flag. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have been like, we're off by a couple, like maybe 1% or 2, like maybe 3%, right? Because it was cold in the Gingerman test. It was absolutely cold in the Gingerman test. But it was like 55, 60 degrees. And temperature does play a huge role, obviously. And so we were just trying to figure that out. Like I was like, but yeah, we made those changes and it seemed like we could get to target. We didn't give it too much more. I didn't look into it closely. We didn't give it too much more thought after that. So yeah, potentially, yes, no. That should have been a indicator, which was definitely something we should have looked at further and a failure on our part to understand completely there. Again, not magic, it's math. Should have done the fucking math, but whatever. Is what it is at this point.
So Tom had one more session on Saturday and we switched tires, correct? We went to the new tires?
We went to tires on the second session.
Mm-hmm. We didn't realize there was a power problem yet.
Not that I know of. I think Grant was thinking that we had, and my recollection is no, we had not figured out truly that there was a power problem. We saw that it seemed lethargic. It seemed not great, but we weren't able to explain it at that point.
He wanted more boost response, but we didn't equate, at least I didn't equate boost response
to
power.
Right, sure. And the other thing is that on the A7s, they have a tendency to work better if you scrub them in. And we wanted to make sure we scrubbed them in the last session of the first day in an attempt to make them ready for the second day morning session, which has the potential to be the best session because it's booth's weather, right? Like we woke up on Sunday and it was 36 degrees. And the track temp comes up okay quickly in the morning because the track has a tendency to heat pretty well, but it's definitely booth's weather. So that's why, that's one of the reasons why we put those new tires on. And I think it was important to put those new tires on to scrub off the junk layer and get to that, candy center that we like so much.
And we'll clarify too, that the tires, while they were brand new, never used, they were still
old.
4 years
old.
Yeah,
they were old. They were kept in relatively conditioned space. They were still pretty soft. You could easily rip a nail across them. So they weren't hard by any stretch of the imagination, but were they the best of the best? No. We were trying to get new tires and it was going to be a problematic thing to get them. In hindsight, again, another failure, I think. Should have just done it. Should have moved hell or high water to get those tires. But didn't. Again, already costs to do these events for us is extremely expensive, especially going to California is extremely expensive. It's as much as three other events, any other place we go. So that's the difficulty. And unfortunately, with SEMA and the timing, talking to our partners, we didn't get those tires early enough. So we should have 100%. I agree. Like, that's one thing that I'm kind of pissed off about myself personally, honestly. But.
And I'll say, too, after Gingerman, I was riding such a confidence high.
Yeah.
Like, I felt in 2018, the last time Tom drove at Button Willow, he got one or two, just a couple of laps in the car and you set down a great time, but it just felt like there was so much time left on the table that if we could go and run laps like we could at Gingerman, it was going to just be, like an easy victory.
Sure.
Which in hindsight was wrong.
Yeah.
Like we did not, was overconfident about, how much time Tom left on the table, because apparently he did not leave very much, if any.
He did, though. I mean, the data says that there was a lot of time there 4 years ago. The track was not the same as 4 years ago. That's a big problem, too. And it also rained for two solid weeks before we went, which also ruins that track. Like, if you go to a track that's in the desert that doesn't rain on very often, and then you go there after it rains, like, this isn't like a Midwest track that gets cleaned off like every other week. That's not what happens. They've had a drought for 11 years. That area doesn't get a lot of rain. It got rain consistently, within that 2 weeks before we went, which took a normal track that, 4 years ago was almost freshly paved, in sections, then 4 years of buildup. They've had a couple rainstorms, but not many, very few. And then they had some crazy rain recently, very uncharacteristic rain recently that completely would destroy the track in terms of its capabilities as well. So we kind of found ourselves in a position where, that wasn't great. But the data, when I ran the data way back when, like I ran the data after in 2018 on the AM when we had it, like the lap before when he ran a 39 or a 40 in the section between on ramp and the entrance to Riverside, on the slower lap, he went 0.7 seconds faster than he did on the 50 on the 138.5 lap. Sorry, minute 38.5 lap. So there was a considerable amount of time there, and we lost that time originally because, and this is not shitting on Andy, but just Andy was dumping some coolant on the track unknowingly. And if you watch that video, you can see Tom sawing at the wheel pretty aggressively when he goes around Andy especially, and then when he's coming into bus stop, not bus stop, sorry. the entrance to Riverside. Is that Bunch Stop? No. God, I always forget that name. Anyway, when he's coming into the entrance of Riverside, that's when you can see him like struggling on the brakes and sawing a little bit, especially because the tires were wet at that point. I mean, they were fundamentally wet. So that is a difficulty. So there was time back then. There was not time. There's not a lot of time this time. Tom really pulled out as much as we could out of it in the whole scheme of things. And that's, yeah, difficulty. We've made some drastic improvements, which I think we've talked about previously. And they should have shown up as better time, but a multitude of factors put us behind that eight ball, unfortunately.
So that second session, Tom went back out, and I think we gave him full boost on the new tires.
Yeah, number four.
Number four, yeah.
Yeah.
And
what is the actual number on that? 32, 35 pounds of boost, so people
understand. It's about 35, but it wasn't hitting that. We had to make some modifications to the wastegate duty cycle. I'd have to look, but it wasn't a consistent 35, let's sure. say. And so the lap time he got was a 142.8. And we come back into the pits. We're all kind of scratching our heads just a little bit. And then we look at the top speed data, and it was down significantly. What was it?
137 versus 151.
Yeah. So 14 mile an hour, slower. And then we realize, okay, we have a big problem here. And yeah, my gut instinct, you know, goes to, you know, what's the turbo doing? Because we just had to change the wastegate duty cycle settings, but the turbo speed seemed within reason. Turbo back pressure seemed within reason. I think, Mike, you took the filter off to check for any.
Yeah, I checked for impeller damage. I checked for shaft play. I checked the filter to make sure it wasn't like completely clogged, because that happens at Button Willow. Yeah, you can literally clog a filter. So I cleaned the filter. We did a compression test. Checked for any exhaust leak. I checked all over the manifold for exhaust leak. We don't run a gasket. I think we mentioned that before. We just machine the surfaces, parallel ground the surfaces for the turbo on the manifold, so that we literally don't run a gasket because we had problems with blowing out gaskets. So we removed that gasket from the system. And since then, we really haven't had any leaks there. So that was great. But yeah, I mean, and everything you would normally do, every normal check for a mechanic, I should say for a mechanical problem. Yes.
Yeah. And on the data side of thing, everything seemed like the engine was happy and running smooth and no problems with the cooling system. So it really left us scratching our heads. And I do think I recall Grant saying something about knock sensor stuff, and I didn't understand what he meant initially. And I honestly, I can't even remember how he found a knock sensor issue. If it was Tony Circa, if Uncle Tony came and helped and also caught it in the data. But long story short, I fucked up the knock sensor settings trying to
improve them.
Yeah, trying to improve them. But the thing that is so frustrating to me is I was using Evan's Performance Academy, has a really cool video series on how to set up a knock sensor in the Link ECU and using the Bosch sensor that we have and everything. And I spent hours working on it one day. And everything he said to do, it didn't work out in reality the same way. And it's not a knock against Evan's Performance Academy. His videos are phenomenal from what we've experienced. But for whatever reason, we just couldn't match up what he was experiencing with what I was experiencing. And so I remember Mike wasn't there that day, but Grant was inside the shop working, and I was driving outside the shop, literally just in his driveway, going back and forth, trying to set up this knock sensor. I went inside, and Grant said that I told him that I knew less after messing with that than I knew before. So with saying that, I thought I had reverted the settings back to original.
Since you went SB Racing.
Yeah.
You didn't.
I smooth brained that. And either I didn't reset it or somehow it reverted back, because at that time we were going through different calibration files almost on a daily basis as we were implementing things and and learning. So the knock sensor was set up to be 10 times more sensitive than it was supposed to be. And that 10 times sensitivity meant that it was pulling out 8 degrees of timing, which was the limit of the amount of timing it would pull. Basically, the instant the car started and ran, as soon as it started with any kind of power, all the knock sensor would go off, even though it was phantom. It wasn't a real knock. It'd pull all the timing back, and then boom, you pull 8 degrees of timing out. Kim, who actually designed kind of the turbine housing and a lot of the turbo setup we have, like literally at Garrett, he was there. He's like, oh, yeah, if you pull 8 degrees of timing, well, that's going to add a lot more exhaust energy. That's why your wastegate duty cycle settings are screwed up. And it's like, oh, so it was just the knock sensor was going crazy, pulling timing, however much horsepower 8 degrees of timing at 35 pounds of boost is, it's a freaking lot of power.
And it wasn't, and it wasn't overly, we didn't have our timing settings to be overly aggressive too, because God knows we can boom engines all the time. So, conservative timing along with extra conservative timing because of the wastegate or because of the knock sensor, pinging itself around doing what it was doing, hitting off that threshold means that, yeah, it was extra conservative. Let's say that.
So with the help of Tony, we adjusted those knock sensor settings back to something reasonable. We put the wastegate duty cycle settings back to where they were originally. And then we found a clear road in Mexico to do some testing on after day one event to make sure everything worked properly.
Yeah, just a couple of pulls. And we were on the radio and Dan's like, okay, it works.
Yeah, it freaking, I was like, oh yeah, that insane power that I felt at Gentryman, it still feels insane. So it was not me getting used to it. I am not getting better at it as a driver.
Yeah. That's like Dan and sex. He's like, this isn't that fun. It's like, you're not in yet. Yeah, that was the problem. So there you go.
Sheesh.
Yeah. So the power came back. We figured out what the problem was. The power came back. So I wouldn't say that, you know, there was a concern that we ruined the tires, you know, didn't use them appropriately or whatever, but at least we got that figured out. So then what? Friday morning?
We got a Sunday morning. No, that was, and the next day was Sunday morning. We got a good night's sleep that night. Everyone was in good spirits, I think.
Yeah, jazzed as we could be jazzed because we still had a car that was in one piece, which is, let's just say, not normal.
Not normal.
But everything else seemed to be running pretty well. That was good. Sunday morning we get there. Everything seems to be pretty good. We didn't make too many changes. We wanted to make some adjustments to suspension. So we've got our shock pots now. And we've got kind of really good data off the shocks now so that we can see the histograms to figure out exactly where we want to be and how to adjust those. So that was really good. We had that data. We just started looking through data. We wanted to be, you know, more prescriptive with the data and make sure that we were doing the right thing.
We dialed back some rear wing, right?
Yeah.
What else did we do? We did a couple other, Tom felt the car was a little lazy.
A little pushy and a little lethargic on rotation and transition. Yeah.
Yeah. He said the brakes were the best aspect of the car, which was, that was another thing. We didn't talk about that. Friday, I was like, man, the brakes feel like.
Oh, yeah, like, the brakes. Dog shit. They had so much travel.
They stopped really well, but yeah, they felt like dog shit. And we found the pedal wasn't returning back to its original position. And
when it wasn't returning to the original position, it was having an extremely long throw comparatively. Like Grant got in the car and pushed on it. After Dan brought it in, we didn't touch anything. Grant pushes on it. I'm like, that's really far. Like he was getting an extra 2 inches out of it. I was like, that's weird. Then he reached down and anytime, you know, any mechanic or whatever who's worked on brakes after bleeding them or pumping them or whatever, and the pedal stays where it's, you know, down and it doesn't come back up, what do? You reach your hand down and you pull on it, right? Well, Grant pulled on it and he got like a half an inch out of it. It's like, what the fuck? like, why aren't they coming back? So we were trying to figure out why they wouldn't come back. And then once he pulled it back and he started pushing on it, it was perfect. Acted normal. Mm-hmm. So that was weird. So then we had to take it apart.
Yeah. So Grant took it apart and found some corrosion on the rotating assembly.
The pin at the pivot position for the brake pedal.
Yeah. And so he cleaned that up and then, rock and roll. Brakes were significantly better, and Tom never complained about the brakes. We asked him repeatedly, and I don't think he loved them, but and we also we saw the highest GE underbraking we had ever seen in this car. And we think some of that has to do with the brake bias
adjustments.
So that was kind of exciting. We've always had like trash brakes, and even I thought on Friday that like, holy shit, this thing stops now, and wasn't quite sure exactly why, but pretty sure it comes down to brake bias, and we'll do some more temperature testing and stuff like that to dial in the brakes a little bit better. Cause now that we are in like moving in the right direction, then there's more room on the table, I think, for improvement.
Yeah.
But yeah, so more or less we had the car kind of ready for Tom to go in the morning. And he ran, I had it up, first session out, 8 a.m., was a 138.7.
138.747, if we want to get exact.
767.
I said, I've got 747 on the data.
I'm looking at the official.
Oh, okay.
Race Hero. Yeah, I'm looking.
Yeah. Dicks. Anyway. Dicks. They took away a couple tenths. Anyway, that was getting us back to where we needed to be. So that was good. Mm-hmm. That felt a lot better. Like, oh shit.
Yeah. Okay. Didn't Tom feel like he blew a turn in that session?
He was upset. He thought he blew a couple turns actually on that one. So he was a little upset on that one, but he said, you know, we'll get that. We'll get that back on the next one. We said, you know, sure, whatever. Not a big deal. I'm just happy that we're back in the range where we want to be. So it's like, to put that into perspective, if we look at the data, because I feel like people only listen to us because we say things about data and because we talk shit. So those are kind of synonymous. Anyway, we look at the lateral Gs. We look at the longitudinal Gs. Substantially better longitudinal Gs. Our lateral Gs very similar. Basically, what you're finding out with that is power is important.
Power is very important.
You heard it here first. When you have 400 horsepower versus 700 horsepower, that might be 4 seconds. That button below.
I wouldn't believe it No way.
So
I think you're lying.
Yeah, four fucking seconds. It was really painful because we were watching the video. When we got to the hotel that night, on that Saturday night, we watched the video of the lap during the day, and then we watched the video of our 38 lap. And before we even got to the out of the second turn, out of on ramp, we were already close to 7/10 down. And I'm like, Jesus fuck, like this sucks. And so I'm glad we got that power and kind of fixed it in that regard, because obviously Tom was able to go out and really closely match that 38.5 almost instantly. So it felt like we were going somewhere.
Sure. The only complaints he had, I mean, we still had understeer. We still had it being lethargic on turn in. I think he said initial turn in wasn't horrific.
No, it was sustained.
Yeah.
It kind of washed out. And that could be, again, 4-year-old tires giving up the ghost. Like, my bad.
Yeah. And then some boost response. And that is, I think, losing, 10% of our displacement to now the 2-liter was a contributing factor in that. But peak speeds were fairly close to what they were in 2018.
Correct.
And by the end of the weekend, they were matching completely. With the same turbo, different displacement, but the same top speed.
Right. Yeah. And so, that at least made us feel a little better that the power was back. Still, you could tell that it was a little lethargic, like off the turn, like I said, 10% there. Still trying to see if we can get a little bit more down low by adding more duty cycles, seeing if we can get it to hit harder.
seemingly, at least right now, it seems to be more mechanically based than it is tuning based. So we couldn't get it to hit much harder. So,
and you know, it sucks because we're making changes in between sessions, and we've got, you know, a limit of four sessions that day, and we're
right.
we feel close. And so what you don't want to do is fuck up a session by getting too greedy.
Right.
And so I was adding plus key on the duty cycle to try and get the thing to spool faster, but I was also trying not to overboost it at the same time.
Right. We had multiple sessions where we would send them out on one tune and then revert if we had to. So we did have some of those. If you're watching the live stream, you'd go out and you hear a couple pops. It's because we overboosted, or it's because of, you know, some other problem basically on that tune where we made a change, something like that. And so we did that and reverted back.
Sure. So I think while it's likely mechanical, the loss of response we had over the last time we were there, there is still, and honestly, Mike and I haven't talked about it and I haven't talked with Grant about it. There's still more we can do on the wastegate duty cycle to try and bring it back in, but will it be enough to make it extra responsive? Probably not. So we'll have to look into that further for solutions.
Yeah, I mean, there's more testing and more tuning to do. I mean, that's fine. As a potential, we're also looking at mechanical changes as a potential. So all in all, that was one of the complaints. You know, I'm trying to... Because unfortunately, I'm not, I think I deleted some of the data from 18. So I'm trying to find that AEM data just so I can get some, you know, longitudinal G data, some acceleration data so that I can do some comparisons here to see where we are and versus where we were just to back it up. We'll see what happens there. And then we'll see if it's just, you know, the displacement going from a 4G64 to the 4G63. Cause for the four, we were 2.2, like Dan said, and now we're a 2 liter. So just gotta look at the data. You gotta find the answer. Like, that's the hard part, right? It's digging and digging and digging and trusting the data. Do you trust this data? What is the data telling you? All that stuff, and we gotta just potentially find it. So we've got so much data to tell us what should be happening, because we have turbo speed, you know, we have turbo speed as well. So we kind of know where the turbo is working. We have the duty cycle on the actual, you know, boost control that will tell us a lot about it. We're measuring. You know, the normal engine parameters that you measure, you know, your temperatures, your pressures, those types of things. So you can really, like, you know, put a performance map together and figure out where it was boosting previously versus where it was now, or any other performance metric. So the data's there somewhere. We just have to find some of the old stuff and then compare it. And then hopefully we'll know if it's more mechanical based or not. And the other thing is too, the setup is kind of an old setup as well. Like GTX 3582R Gen 2. So obviously most people are on the G series now, which is something we've intended to go to. But again, we've been working on improving things that were more broken. That wasn't something that was broken unless you consider the turbo making too much boost and blowing up our engines. Thanks, Garrett. That's your fault. Anyway, so now we can go to the G series if we'd like to, which obviously there's some massive improvements there where we could do some more interesting things. Like I said, Keem was there. Dan was talking about Keem. He used to work at Garrett. He really wants us to run kind of a bigger turbo with some anti-lag features in it as a potential for a mechanical fix. I don't know. We'll see what happens there. But yeah.
Yeah. And so the rest of the weekend, I don't think was particularly eventful. The car ran flawlessly. We kind of maximized it in that first session. The tires, we were trying to rotate them through, and we added some more camber.
Yep. We lowered the front a little bit because I wanted to get a little bit more out of it. We rotated the tires through. Tom wanted to keep rotating it until we got basically the front left being the tire that needed to be the best tire, if you will. So we kept on rotating so we could potentially get there. And we did see a little bit of time. We saw a little bit of time. If you look at if you watch the live stream, if you watched, you know, some of the pictures or videos that are posted, the car does have some suspension control issues that I don't think it previously had. So we're looking into that. Some of the data shows that it's a little bit more out of control than it was previously. So we want to try to figure out what's going on there. And again, the suspension hasn't been updated in a very long time from Fortune Auto. So there's lots of improvements that Fortune can even bring to the table now with their eighth gen, because I'm pretty sure these are the fifth gen pistons. So we can upgrade substantially there. After the 7th gen, things got a lot better in terms of their product offering. So there's a lot of improvements to be had there. But otherwise, yeah, it was hard to maximize. Tom thought he left some time on the table. He thought there was definitely a 37 in there. He was pretty down on himself. I told him to shut the fuck up because he did a great job. Yeah, he's the last person who should be down on himself trying to drive a car like this. And, you know, you only get a couple laps on it. Oh, well, I guess that's the funny part, right? How many laps did he get in it this weekend? That weekend?
Quite a few.
It was well 13? Over 10.
13? Yeah. 12 or 13? Here we're going to play a game. If somebody can tell us in comments or otherwise how many laps Tom has gotten total in our car previous to this, the person who gets it or is the closest, I will send you a shirt. It is less than 13. So there you go. And I'm talking total fucking laps. I'm not saying laps in one day, laps at another track. I am saying the total amount of laps that Tom has ever driven our car around a circuit is less than the laps we were capable of putting down at this event. So we really have to take our, you know, our lickings, and we have to really take this event with a grain of salt that reasonably this has been far more reliable for us than it has in the past. And it's good because we worked a lot on reliability, right?
Sure.
So shine through in that regard. We couldn't get the time we wanted clearly, which is upsetting, but it's clearly much more reliable car.
Blow up.
Yeah. Knock on wood. It didn't blow up in California. It always blows up in California. Now, if it blows up at Gingerman, fine, but it always blows up in California. So I think that's the good news here. And feel free to put your guesses on the freaking how many laps Tom has driven total in the car, and we'll make that happen.
The one weird thing we had at the very last session, and it wasn't detrimental to our lap time or anything. It's just, for me, I just want to say it just so other people are aware. We run exhaust gas temperature sensors, and we had they were loosening up throughout the event. And so Tony Circa afterwards was like, oh yeah, they'll do that. You need to safety wire them. We had honestly never heard of that, never experienced that, never thought of it as an issue. And we had all of them loosening up, and one of them actually got spat out at the very, very end and got burnt up a little bit. So it's an easy thing to overlook, and we'll be definitely...
I wouldn't say we've never heard about safety wiring them. We just never had a problem, and we've been running them for 8 years.
Sure.
So there potentially is a vibration somewhere that is abnormal to what we would normally have in this car that is now causing it to vibrate in a way that shook the shit out of those things. But yeah, they popped out. One popped out completely. So that was funny. We were like, why does it smell like burning? Well, there's a freaking sensor sitting on top of the manifold when we brought it in after the last session. So found it.
Why does it smell like burning?
Yeah, no, is that, you know what I mean? It's the nasty electronic burning smell. Yep. And I was like, and then Grant's like, cause you know, I don't have eyes. Like, you know, where they're like, you need your mom to find you stuff. Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, I can't find my socks and they're right in front of you kind of problem.
Mm-hmm.
My vision is absolutely selective, unfortunately. It's funny because I remember so much like other visual information, but then like things like right in my, like, it's like a T-Rex thing. Like, he can't see right in front of him. That's not a T-Rex. What's that? What can't see right in front of him? Hammerhead shark? Horses?
Yeah.
Wait, horses can't see right in front of them?
They got that weird ass vision that they can see everything, like they can see like 340 degrees and like
people on my 600 pound life.
That is not the animal I was talking about. What I don't know, whatever animal it is, like a hammerhead shark or whatever, can't see right in front of them. Like a chameleon, right? No. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, can't see right in front of me, so I didn't even see it burning. And Grant's like, looks over and he's like, this? And he just pulls the friggin' melting thing off the manifold. So, yeah, that sucked. I'm trying to think of what else. Yeah.
Good news stuff. Transmission was incredible.
The transmission was incredible. It shifted super smoothly. It handled the power, obviously. The whole drivetrain, TRE did a great job. I mean, we got to shout out to all the sponsors on this, because reasonably, everything worked quite well. Like we didn't have, I would say this is one of the first events too where we didn't have some kind of weird failure of a part that we didn't have any control over, which is great, because that's always a hard part when you're using parts and then all of a sudden they fail unexpectedly in unexpected ways. Didn't have any of those failures, so that's great. I was going to say the other thing we can do too, we have a guesstimation of downforce at 140 miles per hour. 140? Yeah.
Yeah.
140 miles per hour. You tell us the closest number and I will send you, what's the prize for this one? What's a good prize? Another shirt or something else?
We got a swag bag here.
Swag bag. Hell yeah.
Sponsor stuff. Put together a little swag bag.
We'll put a little swag bag together.
We should do this. Okay, side note. We should do a swag bag for every episode using sponsor stuff.
Oh my God, we're going to do that now. It's now a thing. That's a great idea. I feel really dirty saying swag bag. Can we call it like something else? I've always felt so
swag doesn't really hit you right, huh? It doesn't roll off the tongue.
It hits me like I'm broing out way too hard. I'm in bro city doing bro things, like swag bag. Like I'm going to do something wrong. I don't know. Anyway.
No. It's one of those cringy buzzwords that
it is.
Yeah.
We're going to do what are we going to do? We're going to do some like next generation swag bags here. Anyway.
Okay. Calm down.
We got a hot pocket full of shirts and t-shirts.
That's
and
right. Hats. Huge, what's it called? Calzone with shirts in it. Anyway, if you can guess downforce at 140 miles per hour, I'm not sending you a calzone. So don't get upset with this face. I kind of want a calzone now. Anyway, 140 mile per hour downforce. You closest number and total car, closest number after a week. I'm not going to cut it off after a week. And yeah, you win a swag bag. And I'll stop saying swag bag because I hate the term swag bag.
We'll think of something before the next episode.
Yeah.
The next episode, we're going to have a great name for these things.
We're going to have a great name. But yeah, we'll send you. So that's the other thing. So the first one was, if you can tell me how many laps Tom has been in the car, not at all, total, that's one. If you can tell us estimation of downforce that we pulled off the car for 140 miles per hour, there you go. That one's the bag that we're going to rename of stuff and things. The stuff and things bag. You're going to get a stuff and things bag. I like that better.
You're fired. Makes me feel better.
Have I mentioned that I'm terrible at marketing? anyway, so that was cool. We got that. Overall, it was a great event. I'm happy we did it. Not exactly excited about the results. But like I said, we got to be pretty happy. With what we were able to accomplish there. And now more than upward, because there's plenty of things now, like I said, that we can fix. We can update the suspension. We're going to do some calculations. We're going to work with some of our friends that, have been helpful and have been on the podcast. We're going to work on just the suspension calculations that we do. And then other people are going to join in on this party. We're potentially going to upgrade some aero. We're going to do all the things that we didn't upgrade last time. And bring it back out and try to do some damage. So that's definitely going to be exciting.
Because you don't actually have to focus on the engine this time.
Right. Yeah, drivetrain problems. Hopefully continue to not have to focus on them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I think we've talked about it before where, we had a problem with wheel speeds, left and right wheel speeds. We talked about that at Gingerman on the last turn where you kind of almost lift up a tire and they were, 30 to 50 miles per hour different. We did not have that problem this time, which was fantastic for everybody involved.
I saw one incident of a wheel spin, and it was when all four wheels spun when shifting from first to second gear. So it's oh, that's cool.
Yeah, After on-ramp, he was taking on-ramp in first because feeling a little lethargic coming out, right? We talked about that, how he was trying to kind of bring up the boost a little bit harder that time. So he shifted into first and I got like left front, right front wheel spin. Yeah. Basically all of it spun. Yeah. That's awesome. Everything spun. But otherwise consistency of the wheel speeds far better. So that's a cool fix. What else? Like obviously the engine and transmission seemingly working pretty well. Cooling system was rock freaking solid. it got, yeah, we didn't mention that before. The cooling system was working so well that we actually had to tape off the inlet ducting because we couldn't get it at, to a temperature high enough. We have safeties set up so that if the coolant temperature isn't above 160 degrees, then you can't, you fundamentally can't make boost. You can't run laps. It doesn't let you do it. Just, you know, just so that it takes it out of the hands of the driver and they don't have to think about it. It also gives you the information that it's not doing that, so you know, but kind of takes it out of the hands of the driver so they don't have to think about it. And it just kept happening. Just Dan, on the first day of testing, just kept happening. And so we had to tape it off. And we taped off a lot, a good 8 inches sure. of inlet, which is the important part. The inlet's the important part. And yeah, still cooled quite well. I think the max temp that we got on any of the days was right at the, what, right at the 190 mark, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I was saying 190 was what was sticking out in my head.
Yeah, and that was, you know, end of lap, you know, maximum temperature, 186 I got right here, 186. And so that was, it was pretty good. I mean, and so that was really cool because obviously lots of updates there as well. Just, and honestly, that was more, those updates are more just bleeding and making sure that we're removing air from the system. We did, Grant just today or yesterday was looking at some of the data and saw some interesting water pump data.
Phenomenon. Like,
yeah, phenomenon. We're trying to figure out why it is happening. But the water pump current, which we're monitoring because of the AIM-PDM, click, 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 was going up and down a little bit, like pretty substantially at different points on the track. So it's interesting that there was something happening in the cooling system where the water pump wasn't needing as much current for some reason. So we're looking into that as well.
Yeah, under certain G loads.
Under certain G loads, yeah. Shit. Yeah. Like turning, the water was doing some crazy shit. Like, what? It was accelerating and braking. Yeah, the water was doing crazy shit on acceleration and braking. Like, yeah. That's
interesting.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to honestly, look at, Hayden, yeah.
That's, yeah, this is where I'm like, huh?
Yeah, but we have a decent mass of coolant because we're running the rear radiator.
Yeah.
You tell me, like,
are people monitoring this kind of thing? Like, I don't know how many people that are monitoring current to the pump and then monitoring, you know, we're monitoring temperature, pressure, current to the pump. We've got multiple bleed locations.
Sure, those are average. Yeah, average things to monitor. Sure, right. But water's doing wacky shit under acceleration. Yeah, it's just got to be a mass thing.
Yeah. We're gonna. We'll see.
Drag guys are monitoring stuff like that too.
Are they? Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, makes perfect.
The 2J yeah, world, well, sure.
2J. We have the block world. Yeah.
Yeah, the billet block. Yeah. Unfortunately, we're not that fancy. But yeah, we'll see. We'll try to look through the data, try to understand what's happening there because that is a little bit weird. Obviously, something's happening there. But otherwise, the car ran really well. You know, we just weren't. The car wasn't there. This is not on. Tom does not have to blame himself. I heard that people were telling me that he blamed himself on the podcast. So I'm going to tell Tom, shut the fuck up officially on this podcast. It's not your fault. He did a great job. The car just in this condition, like in the conditions for the track, that he got as much as he could, as much as any alien creature could have pulled out of that car. So really happy with that result there. It sucks that we couldn't do what we showed up to do, but car rolled back on the trailer really well. Drives really well still. You know, we've got some work to do, obviously, but we'll do that work, and otherwise pretty freaking cool. And it was good to see everybody again because we haven't seen a lot of the West Coasters in a long time. So that was cool as well.
It was crazy how many people had gray hair. That was like, holy shit, we're all getting old.
Everybody got old, yeah. Yeah, oh, that's sad. We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah,
Dan's calling people out now.
We're all old, and it was funny hanging out with Thomas Smith, with Tom O'Gorman, and then our other buddy Tommy was there. So it was like so hard to talk with the three Toms.
Yeah, no, it was good though. I mean, it was cool. Like I said, we haven't seen our buddy Tommy in a long time. We haven't seen Keem in a long time. We haven't seen JD, Jason Dienhart,
Brian Fox.
Brian Fox. Big
shout out to Brian Fox.
He was awesome.
Yeah, towing the car out.
Yeah, he went out with Grant. Like, it was cool to see everybody. You know, we haven't seen Tony in a little bit. And, yeah, it was just really nice to see everybody again. And then like all the West Coast guys and such, you know, Cuban and all those guys. And so it was cool. And overall, really good event. Happy that happened. Happy we were able to get the car out again. Yeah, I don't know.
It's any, like the questions.
It's the best not. Yeah, it's the best not winning and setting. You know how? Yeah. Let's be serious. You know how I am. Everybody knows how I am on this podcast. I don't fucking care because we didn't set a record. And I really, I mean, like I'm saying that I'm upset. Like I'm really annoyed. No matter how positive it is, it sucks that we didn't set that record, but it's about as positive you can get without setting that record. So,
you know,
there you go.
I'll say though, Mike, like I remember we talked previously about like the greatest feeling ever was reaching our potential. And I think at Auto Club Speedway was when we had done that previously. And here it kind of felt like with the cards we had, this is the best.
In a long time, I will admit in a long time that is absolutely true. I think we got as close, we got closer to our potential this time than we had previously with what the car and the track were going to give up that day. So correct. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Still not happy.
There it
fuck
is.
That shit.
Don't let Dan make you soft. No, fuck that shit.
No.
Ain't breaking no record. Useless trip. Fuck
yeah. Oh, you should have. We should have just shoved it off, you know, into the desert.
Fucking left it there.
Yeah. But no, we got some good plans. Yeah, we got some good plans and you know, Tom's pretty excited and we'll make the car suck less, I promise, Tom.
Yeah. It was funny. I don't know if you felt this way, Mike, but so the Time Attack News people were there and they were recording video and talking to Tom and this and that. And it took all my power not to shout Sunday Cup at them.
Oh, you should have done it.
Yeah, Tom didn't even realize it was the same people. It was funny. Tom didn't realize it. He's like, what? You know, and we're like, you know, say Sunday Cup. Just say it in the middle of it. Because we're trying to start some shit. But no, it was good otherwise.
Rap beef.
Yeah.
Rap beef.
No, it was good. And it was just overall, we've got some things to fix. We're pretty happy with that. It'll be interesting to see what it can run at Gingerman, especially if we put some new tires on it. Like I said, we got plenty of mechanical things that we want to change. You know, if we upgrade the turbo, if we improve the suspension, if we improve some of the aero. And the other thing is, I wanted to do this. We're going to do this later in a video, probably like some kind of reel or some bullshit. You know, I forgot what they're called. Anyway, at some point we're going to do TikTok. A thing. Yeah, TikTok. I don't know. Something. Do a dance. We're gonna come up with a professional awesome dance. No, I'm kidding. We're not gonna do that. Don't even ask for that. What we're gonna do is just show off some of the components on the car that maybe some of the new people don't know about or anything like that. But I want to, like, people don't realize, like, our splitter is still plywood. We use our large diffusers in it. You know, we were using our skid pucks. We were using our rods. That is lug fundamentally nuts. We were using our lug nuts, that we use our vents.
Ooh, we use our products.
No. I mean that we a lot of our product, but the point being is that we ran that 38.3. We ran a 38.3, whatever it is, the fourth fastest, fifth fastest time ever at Buttonwillow on the parts that we make, and everybody who's gone faster than us, their splitter cost 20 times as much. At least 10 times as much. Those types of things. You can go fast on good products. You don't need to just jump and go crazy. It's just the system has to work together. And I'm not saying that our system is perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but that's the point. We take some pride in what we've done, and we're trying to bring some of that performance to you guys. And like I said, if you can guess the downforce numbers of our front and rear stuff, I mean, again, the whole freaking aero package is made out of Alumalite. You know, the only carbon on the car is the hood, the roof, the deck lid, and the wing. The rest of it's, there's no carbon anywhere. And so, yeah, it's, I'm pretty proud of that. That's like, we're going to toot the shit out of that fucking horn, because it's like, you can get some real good performance if you just build a package that kind of like is engineered well or designed with. Yeah. Tom, unfortunately went off track and destroyed it. At least a corner of it, we can't really fix it. So we're going to have to build a new one, but not a big deal.
Time for improvements.
Yeah. Not a big deal. It's $500 total. Right? Like, that's pretty cool.
We're reusing those diffusers.
Yeah, we're going to reuse the diffusers. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Come on now. We're not even going to put new ones in.
$100 worth of wood is all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. I'm pretty proud of that. Like, that shows how quick it can be. And it's the same, you know, same diffuser that ran, or same front splitter that went the 38.5. So not a lot has changed in that regard, but it's just cool that the parts are capable of going so quickly and making good downforce, and they don't cost a lot. And I really do like that we're still using it. We might not continue. I don't know what we're going to do there. Obviously, said we might update some aero that's going to be hard to do with wood, but we'll see.
Well, sure, but like I don't see why there's any reason why we can't continue to use the diffusers. I mean,
yeah, I mean the next thing we might do is we've talked about this in the past, and I've been trying to get them made, but this is another failure. Is that we do have a design for an updated large diffuser that has integrated strakes in it. Or at least the ability to put an integrated strake, so it's got multiple levels in it, and it does improve the efficiency, much like the strake improved the efficiency on the standard diffusers. And yeah, maybe we can get those done and put those on instead, because they're a pretty good bump. They're a good 15%. I got to look at the numbers again, but I think they're a good 15% bump because they start channeling the air a little bit better instead of having just the large open mouth or throated section. I'll call it throated section so that it doesn't sound stupid. But yeah,
large open mouth for your swag bag.
Yeah,
swag bag. Let's go.
What it stuff and things bag. Take stuff that. And things. All right, that's all I got. Otherwise, cool. It's a cool event. We appreciate everybody who supported us. You know, I'm. You know, we got a lot of feedback from everybody who said, "Glad to see you out. Glad to see it's running. Looked great. All that stuff." Really appreciate that. You know, if you have any questions, concerns, things you want us to answer about the car, feel free. How many times has Tom driven the car? How many laps before this? How much downforce did we make? As an estimation at 140 miles per hour. And we will send you all that shit. And there. Otherwise,
yeah.
Cool.
Woo. All right, then. Bye. Psst. It's that time again, boys. I need those goddamn reviews. You can say that Devin is forcing you to do them. Or you can leave some genuine feedback, and I'll be sure to read them and get them back to the boys. In the meantime, you can join our Facebook group, which is Professional Awesome Technical Forum. You can follow us on Instagram at Professional Awesome Racing, and we have a Facebook regular page with the same name. But until then, we'll talk to you later, and we really appreciate you listening.